Today we are going to be breaking from our study in Nehemiah, and somebody may be excited about that. I don't know. It was not very Easter. I wasn't really feeling it. Actually, the next 2 weeks, I think we're going to be skipping Nehemiah, but today we're going to be in Luke, and we're going to be in Luke 24, and if you're using the chair-provided Bibles, this is going to be found on page 938. So it's page 938. I don't know if you're using your phone, but again, for the church-provided Bibles, it's on page 938, and this is a no-point sermon, which is always exciting for me because we don't have, like, we're talking about expectations, okay? So if we can just bust that out. Like, today, we're going to be looking at the resurrection morning. And everything about this passage that Luke is going to describe to us is going to be reflecting and contrasting and making us ponder about what we are expecting. And if I have slides up there, like, I put a lot of time into them. I want them to be, worded correctly. I want them to be maybe clever or catchy or something to grab your attention because I'm trying to do something well. I have expectations of how I think this is going to go. The ways I want this to go. And they may be healthy or not healthy. And I want you guys to think in your own life, what expectations do you guys have going forward? You know, you're going to go to work tomorrow because you expect to get paid. You may go out to eat because you expect good food or good services. But either way, our life is full of expectations. And we get to a point of, well, what happens when our expectations are not met? What does that tell us? And this morning, we're going to be looking at the most unexpected morning that has ever happened in all of human history. And so to just kind of get you guys caught up on this, I want to be clear. And the text has got, three movements, we're going to say. And as opposed to saying, I want you to take away this, let's just respond how the text would like us to respond. Okay, and so in verse 55, just starting on page 23 of verse 55, just so we know, I just wanted to bring you guys into the context of where we are. It says, the women, okay? The women who had come with him from Galilee followed along and observed the tomb and how his body was placed. Then they returned and prepared spices and perfumes, and they rested on the Sabbath according to the commandment. So this is in context. We are talking about the women, okay? So every time it says they, it's going to be the women. And to get us to where I feel the text wants us to go, I'm going to direct you to the word perplexed in verse 4. Okay, so we're in chapter 24, verse 4, the word perplexed. If you look up synonyms for perplexed, it is discombobulated, right? That's a really weird word. But it's confused, it's mystified. There's things happening that have confused them. And we're going to get to that, but I want that to be the complex of the context, the reference, what we're looking at is they're perplexed, okay? And now why are they perplexed? Let's go through into our text now. It says, on the first day of the week, Sunday, on the first day of the week, very early in the morning, they came to the tomb, bringing the spices that they had prepared. Now, this seems like a very simple sentence. I'm not an expert in Jewish law, but they have prepared spices, right, to prepare the body. They have done something. And they have prepared these spices, and they probably did some work to get them gathered. I should have looked this up, but from other Gospels, we know it's kind of a lot. And so they're carrying these spices with them, but they've prepared them. They have an expectation, is what we can see from this verse. They are expecting something to happen, and they have done work because they assume a certain outcome. They have done work bracing for that outcome, and they have brought these amount of spices with them that they have prepared. So all the work, they don't know how to make this any more clear. They assume something is happening. They are expecting something to happen this morning. And so what happens when they have prepared? Maybe they're talking, maybe they're just, mourning, probably mourning, and going through their sad emotions, grieving as they're going to this tomb. But then something happens in verse 2. They found the stone rolled away. They are looking around. This is not what they are expecting. This is a perplexing situation. This is confusing to them. Why is the stone rolled away from the tomb? This is not what they are assuming to find. And so what happens is they are, I want to point out that they're observant. Like maybe this is an obvious one. To see the stone's rolled away. This is not how we left it. And as we continue the text, it says, they went in, but they didn't find the body of the Lord Jesus. two things that are pretty big red flags if you were expecting something. You know, like they have prepared the spices for this body and getting Jesus' body for the proper memorial. And every other time in human history, what they did would have played out perfectly. They didn't have to do any planning. They didn't have to do any background checks. They would go to the grave. They would see that the tomb is closed. They would need help moving it because the body would be inside. But today, on this day, on resurrection morning, the tomb is opened. The stone is rolled away, and they went in and they don't find the body. And the text says they were perplexed. They were confused, as anybody in their right mind should have been. What has happened here? What is going on? What are we to expect? Because what we assumed is no longer happening. And when we continue in this text, we see that they were perplexed about this whole situation. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, two men, which we know from other gospel accounts are angels, and they are in dazzling clothing, and they stand next to them. And these women went from being perplexed to now they're terrified, and they are bowed down in a position of submission and like just don't even know what to do. And so what are we supposed to bring from this text? What is this text trying to do? It's trying to grab our attention this morning, because we all have expectations of what's going to happen today. We have expectations of what's going to happen in this service. We've all heard this story a lot. My little kids are in the other room, but they've heard this story from Miss Sandy a lot of times. They know what's going to happen. But what happens when our expectations are not met? God is trying to grab our attention. See, in this situation, God is grabbing their attention. This is not the way that they expected to find this. They're perplexed, they're confused, and it grows from being confused into terrified. And now there's angels around them. This is a completely shocking situation. I mean, I don't know what I would do in this situation. But to know that the text right here is trying to grab our attention is the first point that we can take away from this. All right. Like, there's this. The big thing I would say from this is they had these assumptions, and what they thought they knew just got blown up. They don't know what they thought they knew. And that's a strange spot, because I don't know if you've ever been there, but you were so certain that something was going to happen. And then finally you're getting one other piece of information. You're like, oh, I didn't see that. See, that changes something. And it's like this confusion. It's just like a strong... It wrecks our plans, but at the same time, it's an emotion that God is using to grab our attention. There's this quote I remember from a movie. I don't know if you guys have ever seen Men in Black, and I don't know if you're allowed to use Men in Black in a sermon, but it's like a movie about aliens, okay? And it's like, it's a goofy movie, and it's, I think, mildly appropriate. I don't know. But the point is this, is like, if I can explain the movie to you, there are two people. And Will Smith is one of these people, and Tommy Lee Jones is another one of these people. And they're agents to protect the Earth from aliens that nobody knows is there, okay? A very strange example, but let me continue. Will Smith gets picked for the job, and him and Tommy Lee Jones are sitting on this bench, and Will Smith is trying to wrap his mind around what he has just seen. You know, he just saw aliens, and he's going to be like a policeman, a force for the aliens. And Tommy Lee Jones looks at him and he goes like, I don't understand. So shocking to you that this must be kept a secret. And Will Smith says, well, you know, people are smart. They can handle this. And he says, no, people panic. They get fearful. And when their expectations are not met, they get dangerous. It's very true. And he says, Will Smith is sitting there, and Tommy Lee Jones looks at him and he says, let me tell you this. 1,500 years ago, everyone knew that the world was the center of the universe. 500 years ago, everybody knew that the Earth was flat. And 15 minutes ago, you knew you were alone on this planet. Imagine what you will know tomorrow. And you see, that is something that, even though it is a strange movie, that quote always blew me away. Because I have no idea what tomorrow holds. I have assumptions. I am looking at tomorrow through... In that same book I read, it's like I'm judging tomorrow from today off of lenses that I used from the past. Like my past has affected how I view tomorrow, and I have expectations of how that's going to happen. And when my expectations are not met, I get confused, or maybe I get angry, or maybe I get frustrated and I take it out on somebody else because things are not turning out the way that I would like them to turn out. But that is a wrong perspective because I am not God and I am not in control. But God is trying to grab my attention when things don't work out. And it's maybe a little bit easier to see that as you go through some difficult times. When things aren't working out the way that you want them to work out. When you're feeling like you've tried every option and things are still not going the way that you want. And it is like an always an uphill battle. It is God trying to grab our attention because he is in control, not myself, not any of us, not these ladies. See, and so when we look at this confusion, when we see that from the text that God is trying to grab their attention and they're confused, this points us to a need that we have. And that need is something to combat the confusion. And that is something called clarity. It's clarity. The text is going to point us to what we need, which is clarity on the situation. And as we look, these two men in dazzling apparel, they say, "Why are you looking for the living among the dead?" And there is two things that we can take away from this. One, they're looking for Jesus. You guys are right. You guys should be looking for Jesus. But you're looking for him in the wrong spot. He's not here among the dead. He's among the living. That calls into question for us. You know, like maybe we feel like we are looking for God. Maybe we are looking for clarity. But are we looking for clarity through Jesus? And are we looking for Jesus in the right spot? See, the angels continue and they say, "He is not here, but he has risen." And this blows away the expectations that they had. Their expectations are shattered because they came thinking that they were going to find a dead body, and instead, he has risen. And this is exciting and this is powerful, but it's challenging as well because everybody has expectations for Jesus. In the passages leading up to this, Jesus is constantly correcting his disciples because they think he's going to be this great military leader who is going to rid them of the Roman oppression. Jesus says, "Nah, that's not why I'm here." And some other people think, "Jesus, you're here because you're going to fit into our traditions." He's like, no, I'm here to, you know, do his ministry, to show them what the true love of God is, to show them what mercy really looks like. Not about just following rules. But I think the most hurtful, condemning thing is that we look to Jesus because we want him to tell us that we're right. We want him to be behind us and saying, "Yeah, you are on the right path." That's not always the case for us. See, Jesus is risen. He is the risen Lord and Savior. We can't keep him in a box. We want him to stay over this area of our life, but we don't want him to be in that area. He's in all areas. You cannot contain him. He provides the clarity we need. And see, as the text continues, the angels say something that's really cool. They say, remember how he spoke to you when he was still in Galilee. This guidance that he was giving them from the very beginning. Remember how he spoke to you, how he told you what was going to happen. And like, I'm trying to think of this, and it was like, it's very difficult to find examples, but at the same time, they're all around us and in our own lives. I can tell you the Grand Canyon is big, and I can give you dimensions of the Grand Canyon and say it's this many miles deep, and it is awesome to look at. And you say, yes, Don, that's cool. I understand that it's this many kilometers deep and this many kilometers wide. But when you put your eyes on it, all of a sudden the piece falls into the last piece of the puzzle, and you can see it, and the words don't describe what's happening. Or the words don't even make up for it because a picture is worth 1,000 words. Everything is coming together. And they said, remember how he spoke to you while he was still in Galilee. And he's saying, in verse 7, it says, saying, it is necessary that the Son of Man be betrayed into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, and rise on the third day. In the Synoptic Gospels, which is Matthew, Mark, and Luke, three different times, they all point this out. that Jesus says this to his disciples. This is going to happen. This is necessary. This is why I'm here. And he's trying to provide the clarity that his disciples need to view him through the right lens. But they get confused. They don't know what to do. It says that sometimes that they're afraid to ask questions because they don't want to insult him. They don't know how to put this into proper context. And yet they still need clarity. But see, now it says he was betrayed and he was crucified on the third day. And in verse 8, something amazing happens. It says, and they, the women, right? The women, it says, and the women remembered his words. All of a sudden, now the picture has come together. Now they can see what Jesus Christ has done. It's amazing to us because, or to me maybe, because I always feel like I need a sign. I don't know about you guys, but sometimes we're like, oh man, God, we just need some kind of clarity. If two angels showed up to me and started talking to me, I would be all in for sure. You know, that would be an amazing sight. If I could just see the tomb or if I could see the nails in his hands, something like that. And I would be like, yes, I'm all in. If you could just show me. And Pharisees do the same thing. But here we see in verse 8, what's amazing about this is it's not the angels that they're talking about. They're not like, oh, these two angels told us and now we can believe. It's not that at all. It says they remembered what? His words. They remembered his words, his faithful and true words that he has been saying from the beginning. That Jesus Christ is going to come and be betrayed. And he's going to be into the hands of sinful men and he's going to be crucified and he's going to pay an awful, awful price to save people like us and be raised on the third day. And that is an amazing thing because that is the clarity we need to view God in the proper context. God is not here to serve me in the way that I want him to serve me. He is not here to build my kingdom or my business or my finances or my home or my family or anything else like that. God is about saving me and including me into his kingdom. And that offer is the same for everybody. And so when we have this clarity, just to wrap our heads back around this, we have this confusion and the text is trying to grab our attention in this first five verses. And we found out we need clarity. And we see that the angels, that God has provided the clarity and the confirmation that they needed to remember his words. What do we do once we have the clarity that we need? See, the last thing that this passage is going to challenge us to do is to act. In verse 9, it says, returning from the tomb, they reported all these things to the 11 and to all the rest. The ladies returned to the tomb. We're going to see three different groups of people, if you will, in these last five verses. The first is the ladies. They go, and this is an act of faith, because they're telling the disciples and all the rest what they've seen. You know, we can stand here on Easter and amongst this group of people and say, Jesus Christ died for me and he rose again. That has not really been said by anyone at this point in the history of the text. The only person who said this and understood it was Jesus himself. There's prophets. We read a prophecy from Hosea earlier as our call to worship. Prophets are talking about this, but they don't know who or when this or why or how to make sense of this. And yet these girls are going to go to the disciples and they're going to tell them everything that they found. The tomb was moved. The door from the tomb is moved away. There's no body in there. Two angels showed up and told us, where Jesus is not here, he's risen. What are you to make about that? But those girls are taking a step of faith, and that's something beautiful and amazing and awesome, because any step towards God is a great thing to do. And we see in verse 10, it says who these ladies were. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and the other women with them who were telling the apostles these things. We see this list of ladies because this is a trusted list of ladies. This isn't like something crazy that they, you know, some guy just shows up and starts talking to you. This isn't the guy on the corner who has like foil on his head trying to tell you something crazy. These are people that they know, people that they hung out with that are telling them their testimony, the something that they have seen that is amazing. So this is this first group. They take that step of faith. They have acted. They have told the disciples what they saw and how it affected them. And so what happens? And see, in verse 11, we see the second group of people. It says, but these words seemed like nonsense to them, and they did not believe the women. It's nonsense. didn't believe it. Write it off, because that's all they can do. They're confronted by their friends and they're like, what are you talking about? Get out of here with that. We don't want to hear that. We don't want to explore that. We want nothing to do with this. And they don't believe it. And that is an option. You can try to ignore what is being told to you. But see, there's something amazing that happens in verse 12. And this is the third group, if you will, but it's Peter. It says, Peter, however, he got up and he ran to the tomb. He got up and he ran to the tomb. And when he stooped in to look, he saw only the linen cloths. Peter acted. He heard something and he responded and he ran to go investigate. And so he went away amazed at what had happened. Peter went and he explored what these girls said. He investigated the testimony and he responded by running over there, and he got to be changed inside. Something amazing happened to him. He saw how God worked and he believed, and his life was never the same again. And as we get to this third portion of this text, we saw that God is trying to grab our attention. We saw that we need something clear, and that comes from the words of Jesus. But finally, what this is challenging us to do is to respond to this message. Because you cannot receive clarity like this and remain the same. You can't. You have to either explore it and be changed and take all that comes with it, or you can try to ignore it and not believe it. You see, you can't remain the same. Isaiah 43:19 says, behold, I'm doing a new thing. Do you not perceive it? I will make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. He is doing something new, and it's visible to see. And when that something is visible, it's an amazing thing to be part of. That's exciting. But see, when you get to this point where it's like a way in the wilderness, it's kind of difficult, because normally when we find ourselves in the wilderness, we've made a lot of bad choices to get there. And we're looking for a way out. And Jesus says, I'm doing this new thing and I'm providing the way out for you. But you can't lead on the way out. We can't do that. We got ourselves into the mess. He's doing something new. He's making the way out. This requires us to follow him. And rivers in the desert is also something amazing. Because when we look in the desert, we never think of something lush that has a supply we need. We always find ourselves lacking. And yet, that's not what this new thing is. He's providing for us the water and the refreshment and the renewal that we need. See, that's what we're celebrating this morning, is not to say that we're good, not to say that we've got it under control. But we're here to appreciate the great sacrifice that Jesus Christ made for people like us, to know, to be able to admit, to be able to confess to each other that we're sinners, that we're in trouble, that we need help, that we're sinking, and we don't know how to get out. We've got ourselves lost in the wilderness. We're stuck in the desert with nothing. We need help in the worst way. And that's what Jesus Christ did. He's the Son of God who came here to save people like us. Now, he's here to be everything we ever need, to restore our relationship to God. And as we look this morning to celebrate Easter, we have hope, because sin and death could not keep him in the grave. Nothing can defeat Jesus Christ. And as our hope is in him, that gives us hope for ourselves, because he is walking with us. He is using all things for our good and his glory. And that no matter what situations we may find ourselves, if we are able to keep our focus on him, he will blow away and shatter any expectations that we could ever have for ourselves. His kingdom is far greater than anything we could ever dream of. And again, Revelation always talks about streets of gold and diamonds. But the jewels and the gold mean nothing if you're not in the presence of the living God. He is what makes heaven, heaven. And he can make the desert seem like lush gardens As long as you have him, you have everything you need. And that's what Jesus Christ came to do. And that is where our hope should be. Let's go ahead and pray this morning. Lord, we thank you so much.